The Local Edition on Radio Catskill.
Hey, thanks everybody for being here tonight. We'll play a little electrified honky-tonk for your entertainment.
Cliff Westfall performed at the Nutshell Music Hall last Saturday. You can hear that performance tomorrow night. Cliff Westfall live in Lake Huntington tomorrow night at 8 on Sunday Stage, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Well, this town sure seems awful small with your big mouth breathing on the air.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is Narrowsburg resident Jim Johnston. Jim was born and raised in Parker's Prairie, Minnesota, a town of 800 people. His was a very Midwestern upbringing, complete with farms and farm animals and bingo and choir and lots of church. His greatest passion was singing. In the first half of the show, Jim's going to tell us about singing while attending Concordia Moorhead College in Fargo, North Dakota, and then what he did after college. In the second half of the show, Jim and I are going to talk about kindness. And Jim has a beautiful story of an important friendship that developed from one simple act of kindness. Here's my conversation with Jim Johnston.
Thank you, Donna. I'm so happy to be here.
Parker's Prairie, Minnesota. Oh my God, that sounds so wholesome and in some ways kind of similar to the Catskills, would you say?
Yeah, I would. From an earlier time. I mean, I grew up there in the 60s and 70s, but yeah, it's a very small town vibe with neighbors, you know, knew all your neighbors and knew all the shopkeepers. And so, yeah, it's a lot like the Catskills, actually.
Yeah. You know, I just have to say it's such a fortunate thing when you have a passion early in life the way you did for singing. Tell us about your singing and your singing in college.
From a very early age, I just loved to sing. And my mom used to sing. You know, I think had her upbringing been a little different, she might have actually been able to do something with her voice in terms of opera or something like that. But she used to come in and sing to me when I was very, very little. She'd tuck me in to go to bed at night and she would sing to me. And I think that's where it started. She would sing three songs, You Are My Sunshine, Silence is Golden, and Green Sleeves.
Oh.
So I loved singing all through school. And at one point, my parents bought me a guitar, which felt like a huge stretch money-wise to me. I was trying to write some music and sing. And I actually picked my college, Concordia Moorhead, because they had a world-renowned choir. That was pretty much what I based my college choice on, was really wanting to get into that choir. So that's what took me there. During college, you know, when you got there, you would audition for the choir. And of course, I was just dying on pins and needles to try to get into this choir. And PJ Christensen came in. He was the director. And so he was like God. And I was the only freshman who made the callbacks that year for the men's, for the tenor section, at least. I remember sitting down and he had everybody sing a scale and I did my little scale and he kind of closed his eyes and took his hands off the keyboard and then turned to me and pointed with this big long director's finger and said, "You're going to be the next Caruso."
Wow.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool moment coming from Little Parker's Prairie, Minnesota, and never having even had a voice lesson. Being in that choir was a really perspective broadening, amazing experience. We toured Norway, and every year we would go on another tour in the United States. And it just the music and the to be part of a really excellent conglomeration of people doing this music was just an amazing experience.
But after college, you told me you had no plans. I was wondering if you ever thought of pursuing singing.
Well, I started pursuing it a little bit in the early 90s. I moved to New York City. I did some cabaret. There was a cabaret bar called Don't Tell Mamas.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and I did a little cabaret there and took some voice lessons. My voice teacher was Bette Midler's voice teacher, and he was a wonderful man. You know, he was probably in his late 70s when I started taking voice lessons from him. He was almost like a grandpa to me. He was so kind and just had a beautiful approach to how he worked with the voice. And so I did a little cabaret, but I just never really went for it. Some part of me didn't believe I could have done something with it, and I don't know that that's true, but anyway, here I am all these years later.
Became a flight attendant for Northwest Orient. Let's talk about that for a minute.
I moved to Minneapolis after college. I don't know how this happened. I don't think this would happen in today's age. It's a little embarrassing to say this on a radio show, but kind of without a plan at all. So I went home to my parents after I graduated. About a week later, thought I better head out and start a life. So I drove to Minneapolis and got a job helping to coordinate a program that facilitated high school students coming to the state capitol for a week and becoming pages at the capitol. And then I got this flight attendant job, which took me to New York, and I started the singing.
I wanted to hear about being a flight attendant back then, because that was like 1985. I'm imagining that a nice thing to do in those days is to get on a plane and travel, which is really not what you could say now. So I was wondering if you could just tell the listener a little bit about what flying was like then.
Absolutely. It was very different. I started May 28th of 1985. I started in Minneapolis. And it was a very different job when I started than when I finished. There was still some glamour to it, and it still was a very sought-after job. Everybody used to dress up to fly, and the service was kind of fancy in those days. I mean, I used to love to work in first class. We had what we called a seven-cart service. You'd walk into first class, and the first thing you would do is go around with drinks. And then you would come back, and when the meal was getting ready to start, you'd go out with the first course, which was caviar. The caterers would board this big frozen swan with a fancy vodka bottle stuck in it and some caviar, and you'd go around with this big swan and serve caviar to all the first class passengers who were all dressed to the nines. And it felt like an event, you know? I think the passengers... like it was an event to fly. It was special. And then we'd go around with all these other carts and, you know, hand toss and serve the salad and plate all the entrees at the beside people's seat. And there was good champagne. And it was just very sort of civilized and gracious. You know, you see all these videos now of people getting up and yelling and causing problems on airplanes. And there was just none of that.
Yeah. I remember you telling me that you ran into someone, I don't know what his position was in the airline, but he told you something very funny about when you were chosen to be a flight attendant.
So I was out one night with some friends and we were at a club and this gentleman came up and we were talking and he introduced himself as being affiliated with Northwest Orient at that time. And I said, oh, my name is Jim Johnston. I'm a flight attendant. And he goes, oh, you're Jim Johnston. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, we hired you as an experiment because, well, when I started flying, there was a maximum height regulation, or there had been. And I think, I can't remember if it was maybe like 5'9" or 5'10". And if you were taller than that, you wouldn't be able to be a flight attendant. And I'm 6'5". And there had been some lawsuits because they used to force women to weigh themselves. And of course, if they were over a weight that the airline determined was appropriate, they couldn't fly. So there had been a lawsuit. The airlines lost that lawsuit. And he said, you know, we sort of thought there might be some lawsuits around the height thing. So in part, we hired you as an experiment to see if someone who was really tall could be in the airplanes. So I think it's true that I may have been the tallest flight attendant in the world for a brief window of time. So I didn't get famous as a singer, but I do have one thing I can be notable for.
Well, it was an experiment that turned out well for everybody, I think we can say. We just passed the 21st anniversary of 9/11. And I was wondering if you happened to be in the air that day.
I wasn't in the air. Before the attacks, I had arrived in Amsterdam. So I woke up in the morning at what would have been about noon, maybe New York time, the day of the attacks. So they had happened. And my habit was to turn on, you know, all over the world at that time, you could get an English TV station through CNN. So I always turned on CNN when I would wake up just to see what was happening in the world. And I, you know, had just awakened. I had a little jet lag and I was groggy and turned on CNN. And there was Judy Woodruff sitting, and behind her was a view of the towers smoking, and or the damage of the towers. the smoking, and it was so surreal. I couldn't figure out what was going on because it was so mind-bending that I thought it must be like a movie and she was playing a part, or, you know. And then in a few minutes, when it dawned on me what happened, I was dumbfounded. It was such a eerie feeling to be sitting in this hotel room in Europe and Twin Towers come down, and not knowing what was happening in the country, that we were under attack in some way possibly. And it was really sad and surreal. I remember going down to the lobby because I just didn't really know what else to do, and slowly flight attendants and pilots started to just kind of filter down into the lobby and be together without really knowing what was going on. It was really, really something.
You also told me a story about, this is before 9/11, you had left your wallet in a cab, and the cab driver called you, got a hold of you, and wanted to return the wallet. And you take it from there.
Yeah. So it was actually my cell phone, which made the story.
Cell phone, right.
Yeah. And it made the story even more touching to me, because clearly if he had my cell phone, he somehow had to figure out what my phone number was. And then find out my landline number and call me. But anyway, this gentleman got a hold of me and said, I'm your cab driver from last night or the night before, or whatever it was. And he said, I have your phone. My wife works at the World Trade Center, and I think she was in the second tower. And he said, if you can go down there, she'll come down at lunch and meet you outside and give you your phone. And I just, you know, as a New Yorker, I was like, God, that's amazing that a cab driver would do that, you know, go to all that trouble. So I went down at the appointed time, and this woman came down. Remember, she was this lovely, lovely woman and so kind. And we chatted for just a few seconds, and I thanked her, and I just said, you know, can I give you some money, or, you know, just for all your trouble? And she's like, no, this is the right thing to do. And we're so glad you got your phone back. And then I left. And then it was a week or 2 weeks later, the towers came down, and she was one of the first people I thought of, because I'm like, oh my goodness, what happened to that kind woman? Did that kind cab driver lose his wife that day? And of course, I don't know, but I still think of them when I think of 9/11.
Right. You have no way of knowing. Was she dead? Was she injured? I'd really like to talk about the impact of kindness when we come back from the break. So let's do that now, and we'll be right back.
Sure.
Catskill Character on Radio Catskill with today's guest, Narrowsburg's own Jim Johnston. We'll be right back after these brief messages.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Kai Wright. This week on Notes from America, Republican state lawmakers are introducing a rapidly growing number of bills targeting transgender people. What's behind this movement? Maybe political opportunism, but on this week's show, I talk with a trans journalist who's asking, what if it is actually a strategy to erase trans people? Join me and join the conversation. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
Hello, if you're a book reader, and even if you're not, I'd like to invite you to join me, Aaron Hicklin, every Sunday at noon for Shelf Life on WJFF Radio Catskill, a show about books and the people who love them. Each episode, my guest picks two of their favorite books. I read them, and then we get together to talk about them. That's Shelf Life on Sundays at noon on WJFF Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. My guest today is Jim Johnston. If you live, work, or have spent any time in Narrowsburg in the summer months, you might have seen Jim walking down Main Street in his bathing suit with a towel around his shoulders, going for a swim in the Delaware River at his happy place under the Narrowsburg Bridge. In the first half of the show, Jim talked about growing up in Parker's Prairie, Minnesota, his passion for singing, and becoming a flight attendant in 1985. In the second half of the show, Jim and I are going to talk about kindness, and he'll tell the story of his relationship with his friend Mary, who became a very important figure in his life. But he would not have known Mary had it not been for a simple act of kindness. Let's get back to it. Jim, we're in a very precarious place right now, and people are divided. They're sad, they're mad, and full of blame and, dare I say, hatred of the other. Where does kindness fit in here? What are your thoughts?
You know, earlier we spoke about my experience as a flight attendant, and I think that shaped a lot for me, because wherever I went, all over Asia, South Asia, Europe, people were really kind to me. There was a time when I was flying, we called them South trips. They were in Asia, and you would be the only American crew member, and the rest of the crew would be all Asian-based flight attendants, and people were so kind. So I had the experience of having grown up in little tiny Parker's Prairie, an all-white community in Minnesota, and traveling all over the world and meeting all these people from different cultures with different skin colors and religions and customs. And they were all kind and gracious, helping me out on the street if I was lost. So I think that affected me. And, you know, when I look at all the stuff that's happening now with us culturally, that I'm very grateful for that experience, because it really broadened my horizons and showed me that we're all human beings, many of the same feelings, needs, wants.
It shames me to say that nowadays I have to actually sometimes stop myself and think about being kind, as opposed to having an instantaneous eruption of some kind of negative emotion. And I think that we have lost that. It's not just a natural way of being. And when I told you I wanted to have this discussion about kindness, I didn't even know about your relationship with your friend Mary, but I think it's illustrative of how kindness can have a snowball effect throughout your life. So keeping that in mind, would you please tell the listener your story about how you actually met Mary?
Sure. My first apartment alone in the city, and was so excited about that. It was on Riverside Drive, so I was very close to the Hudson River, and it was a big, giant, old building. There was a woman there named Mary, and I didn't know her. I'd seen her a couple times in the elevator and, you know, getting the mail, that kind of thing, down in the lobby. Anyway, one night I was coming home, and she was walking ahead of me. We had never met, but she was a very petite woman, and at that time she was probably in her mid-70s, and so she was walking down this big hill. It was a big hill down to the building, and she had these two big kind of cumbersome bags of groceries. As I caught up to her, I just introduced myself and just said, "May I help you carry your bags?" I told her I lived in the same building, and she was appreciative of the help. So we walked a ways together and started a conversation. She just was very interesting and piqued my curiosity, and she was so vibrant and full of life. So I helped her with her groceries. I was on the 6th floor. She was on the 19th. You know, we got on the elevator. I got off at 6 and she went upstairs. And then we ran into each other a couple times in the lobby and started to speak. And that, over, you know, a little bit of a few encounters, turned into a friendship. And she would come down to my apartment sometimes for a drink, or I would go up to her apartment. And we'd have these great conversations. And she was just an incredibly interesting woman and brought a lot to my life.
What was she like?
I was always fascinated when she would tell her stories, because she grew up in England in a very small town and came over to the United States. If I remember correctly, when she was, I don't know, probably 19 years old. And made a career and a future for herself. I'm going to get this wrong again, and I did when we spoke about it, but I think it was called an automat thing where, you know, the food would be in the little windows in Horn and Harda. Yeah, thank you. So she, at a time when I'm assuming it was kind of a big deal, forged a career with them as a woman, single woman, and made a big job for herself there, and eventually became an interior designer. She was the editor of Bride magazine for a while, if I remember correctly. And she told me once that she had been offered a job as an editor for Architectural Digest. And I just loved the way she approached life. She wasn't much for limitations, which I think showed in, you know, what she built for herself. And she really inspired me to take risks and try things and not to shortchange life.
You know, Jim, forgive me for interrupting you, but I remember the story you told. Mary was a single woman, but she wasn't always single. She was married when she was young, and that didn't last long because she did something that a lot of women wouldn't do back then in the 60s. But tell the story of the dinner party when she was with her husband at this dinner party.
Sure. I remember her telling the story that she and her husband had been to a dinner party. And this was probably in the late 60s, I'm guessing. And they were walking home from the dinner party. And I don't think they had been married for that long. And she said they stopped. They were under a street lamp and he stopped her. And he just said, you know, Mary, you must never disagree with me in public. For her, that was a pretty key moment. And she ultimately divorced him. And I think from the way she told the story and what she said, that it, she sort of decided then that if that's the way it was going to be, she was out. You know, it hit something in me. I can feel it sort of in my nervous system now that, like, how amazing is it to have that kind of allegiance to oneself, and not in a distorted or angry or selfish way, but just, oh no, this is not a relationship I want.
And that was the 1960s. And, you know, women were in so many ways still basically second-class citizens. But she did. She took a huge risk and a huge leap. You yourself made a huge leap. You're now what's called a core energetics practitioner, and you are the academic director at Core Energetics. And we're going to get to that in a second. But I was wondering if, knowing Mary and knowing her story, if that might have possibly had a conscious impact on you or an unconscious impact that helped you to make a leap in your own career.
I love that you broach the question as having either a conscious or unconscious impact. The healing modality that I'm a practitioner in now is about working with consciousness and the body and the nervous system. And so as we're talking, I think our friendship, our relationship, and what she brought to me had a pretty profound unconscious effect. It opened me to possibility, sort of, and to saying yes, maybe rather than playing it small, and to go for it. So as we're talking, I would imagine that, yeah, there were things that happened in my nervous system, in my awareness, and whatever the interior part of me that was affected when she would tell me these stories, that, yeah, there's more possible. It's a big world. And go out, do it, see it, experience it, say yes.
If we could just get back to the kindness topic for a moment. You know, I hear people say all the time that we live in a world of narcissism. There's no graciousness in narcissism. But when you practice kindness, you're not just interesting, you're interested. You're interested in others around you, and you notice things. And in this relationship with Mary, you started to notice a change in her. And what happened was, ultimately, as her health failed, you became responsible for her well-being. What was that like for you?
Well, it was a mix of things. I think, you know, I want to just say something about Mary. I mean, having grown up in that little small town and being a Midwestern boy at my core, you know, there you had a certain kind of relationship with your elders. And Mary and I had a real friendship, and she was very interested in me. So it felt very reciprocal. And I think that's one of the things, one of the great gifts of the relationship, is I felt seen and heard. And so anyway, as she started to decline, it was a lot of things. I mean, she was very independent, and so she wouldn't really accept a lot of help. So I would have to sort of find ways to work my way in to help her kind of, I don't know, on the side. But it was just, you know, talking about things like when she was unable to live alone, how would we set up healthcare for her? We were getting ready to go maybe look at, she wanted to go look at some facilities where she might think about living. She opened a joint bank account so that if I needed to write some checks to take care of her, I could. And, you know, I knew there was some comfort for her in knowing that I was there. And it was, you know, I was still flying when she passed away. So as she declined, you know, we would talk on the phone a lot, and I would call her from my layovers, or she stayed up late. So I would get home from some trip as a flight attendant and be in the cab talking to her at midnight on my way home and laughing. And but it just, it was like having a little family in the building. And I know she would have been there for me too if I had needed her.
Yeah, you know, it's such a beautiful story, Jim. And to think that if you hadn't stopped that night when you saw her struggling with her packages and just was kind and asked her if you could help her, if that hadn't happened, perhaps you wouldn't have developed this beautiful relationship. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And as I struggle to practice kindness, I'm going to keep you and Mary in mind. So thanks for that too. And thank you for joining me today on Catskill Character. It's been a pleasure having you.
Oh, Donna, thank you. It has been a great pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with today's guest, Narrowsburg resident and core energetics practitioner, Jim Johnston. The Core Energetics website is coreenergetics.org. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 11:30. The last Saturday of the month is Travels with Triggs, hosted by Greg Triggs in the 11:30 time slot. Please join us every Saturday for more discussions with fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond on WJFF Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Be kind, and thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. Garnet Health, going above and beyond to elevate care every day for every person. Learn more at garnethealth.org. Exceptional lives here. And from The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Move Sullivan. Sullivan County's free bus system helps people get around. Whether they're going to work on time Monday through Friday, visiting doctors in Monticello, Liberty, Rock Hill, and Harris, or heading to class at SUNY Sullivan. Move Sullivan helps people shop in downtown Wurtsboro or Conejunga Lake, or takes them to the Coach USA bus station so they can go even farther. Info at movesullivan.com or 845-434-4102. Move Sullivan, connecting our communities. Paid for by Sullivan County Government.
This Week in This American Life, imagine finding a new hobby and realizing,
to do this hobby right, according to the ways of the masters, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have to bend the law to get the materials that you need.
If not break it.
Yeah, to break international laws.
The hobby? Making lures for fly fishermen. And what may be the greatest feather heist ever.
Saturday at 6 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. Broadcasting from our studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. Public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.